Tovarich, welcome to Friend or Fed, the Vladimir Putin Friend or Fed, the show that questions people's priors. It's basically like Meet the Press, but based. We are here. We are joined by some of the contributors for the past month. Anyone who's been paying attention to the weekly show, we've been talking about, we've been reading and reacting to Alexander Dugin's book, The Great Awakening versus The Great Reset. I have some, not all. If Adam Patrick decides to join us, we will have all of the contributors over the last month that has now been building to this moment. This is the show that Jason from 5 years ago would hate with a Clint Russell kind of hatred for putting Putin's name in a sentence next to friend. I would not have been able to conceptually deal with that kind of information. This is probably the most personal show for me in a weird way, in terms of a retrospective kind of moment. Anyone who knows anything about me, Ukrainian Polish, Canadian born, but Ukrainian Polish background, was a self-affirmed Ukrainian nationalist since 91. Putin's been on my radar. Mark can attest to this. Putin's been on my political radar for a very, very long time. And I was very firmly in the he's an evil monster camp, which, you know, you can still claim that. But now we also are aware of other evil monsters out there. And I think it's time to stop examining these people with Saturday morning cartoon logic and actually giving everyone their due. So, gentlemen, thank you very much for joining us. This is like a Mount Rushmore, some of the most intelligent people out there. So I am very honored and humbled by your presence. Of course, we have Tommy Sammons from the Year Zero podcast. We have Thomas 77 from the Mind Phaser Productions and Thomas TV, which is going to be starting up soon, and the mighty Peter Canones from the P. Canones Show. Of course, my valiant and trusty sidekick co-host, Mark Aaron. There we go. Join our Patreon if you want to support the show. We always appreciate it, man. Comment section, like, subscribe, and share. If you want your comments read out, you can always go over to our Rumble feed that's going on simultaneously. Give us a rant and we'll read it out. Or otherwise, if you say something really, really intelligent or interesting in the YouTube comments, you might get a mention. And let's start this off, gentlemen, before we get to everyone's personal feelings on Mr. Putin. There's a thing that happened in the Canadian Parliament recently. I feel that we need to address. So let's get to this.
We have here in the chamber today a literal Nazi. A Waffen SS soldier who pledged allegiance to Hitler, fought against our allies in the Soviet Union, and was complicit in the Holocaust. This man's a criminal. Not a great look.
I've never seen that before.
It's a good one.
If anyone's not aware, saving that for the stream, Jay.
You're welcome. Anyone who's not aware of this, of course, the Canadian Parliament hosted Zelensky, the current war criminal in chief of Ukraine, and they had, for some reason, they thought it was a great idea to have the a veteran of the Ukrainian. Was it a Waffen? Yeah, the Ukrainian 14th
Waffen Grenadier, their SS, because they were not a Germanic formation. They weren't entitled to wear the Sieg runes, nor were they formally incorporated into the Waffen SS. Waffen Grenadier Division der SS, literally division of the SS. These weren't just racial conceits. It would have been problematic to assimilate non-Germanics into the formal structure, but they were also identified as first Galicki. And I mean, what's incredible to me is just, you know, like I was saying before we went live, these people literally have no idea that Ukraine was Axis adjacent in World War II. Like, I don't know who they think, like, what side they think Ukraine fought on, but it's literally incredible. I don't believe they could locate Ukraine on a map.
Well, sorry, just to cut in for a second. Like, you don't even have to be a student of history to understand that if you're fighting against the Russians during World War II, you are the other guys.
Yeah, like, I mean, and it's don't get me wrong. Like, I mean, to me, this is offensive because, like, the rat man of Ukraine and his Zionist sponsors, like, they have absolutely nothing in common with the Third Reich. Like, literally, if you're clicking up with, you know, the armed forces of Ukraine or Azov, you're like literally a race traitor. So, I mean, there's something disgusting about these guys trying to invoke, you know, these kinds of patriotic images of the Second World War. But, you know, the Canadian Parliament, like, obsessed as they are with their kind of, but I mean, I made the point before, like, wokeism is illiterate. Like, these fools in London during the summer of Floyd, they were defacing the Churchill statue in Trafalgar Square because Churchill's a fascist. It's like, well, he's your guy. Like, I don't care if you want to deface a Churchill statue. I mean, I think Churchill's a piece of shit, but it's like, he's your guy. And like, they're not even, they don't even know their own lore, you know? So it's like 14th Waffen SS are the good guys. Churchill is a bad guy. We're all racist. Zelensky, this literal like comedian is some great man for, you know, stacking bodies 10 feet high of his own people. Like, it's like literal illiteracy. Yep. Like, there's no strategic logic to this whatsoever. I've said that since day one, you know. Yep. Like, it's not even a question of, you know, like, divergent opinions on what the way forward is geostrategically. There is no geostrategy. Like, there's literally no understanding of this situation at all. You know, it's, I mean, the tribe hates Russia first, last, and always. That's the impetus, obviously, for, you know, turning Ukraine into this like suicide torpedo masquerading as a country. But like, the people, it was incredible to me. Like, I mean, here, like, there's literally a critical mass of Ukrainians in Chicago. Like, we literally got like a designated community area called Ukrainian Village, and it's full of Ukrainian people. So it's not weird here to like see Ukrainian flag. But seeing some like dumb fuck like liberal in like Cambridge, Massachusetts, saying he loves Ukraine, it's like, bro, like, why? You love Ukraine? Like, you understand what the lore is there? Like, you understand? It's really incredible. And I, you know, like I said before we went live, I mean, 30, 40 years ago, it's not like America had a highly nuanced, and Canada, including that too. You know, it's not like there's some like a highly nuanced and like well-developed kind of understanding of the world, but people had a basic understanding of like who fought on what side in the Second World War, you know, and like they had a basic understanding that if you're an anti-fascist, Churchill's your guy, you know what I mean? There wasn't this kind of like scattershot illiteracy of, you know, it's just kind of like this pastiche of like weird random conceptual biases. And kind of arbitrary villain figures, you know. But yeah. That's it. Like, there's nothing more to it.
Well, or it's like the friend enemy thing, but not even thought through at all, because Ukraine good, Russia bad, right? So obviously everyone in all of Ukrainian history must be good because Russia's bad, and that's the level. It's not that they didn't.
Well, it's like, I mean, they point at people too. It's like weirdly. I guess it's because there's like there hasn't been a military draft now in half a century or something, but it wasn't even when like, you know, American corpses were coming home in silver boxes every week, people didn't like literally hate Ho Chi Minh and General Giap. You know, like people didn't. I don't understand how people can go into these like sputtering rages about how much they hate Putin. I mean, just like they do Trump. Like, there's not any. I mean, I guess it's the same way people get invested in like WWF wrestling or the way like unsophisticated people think that these like Netflix dramas are actually real or something. Yeah. Like, no, people can tell you like why Vladimir Putin is this like monstrous figure. You know, they can't tell you why, like, it's like, okay, so a chief executive who doesn't allow NATO to like deploy a decapitation range is evil. Like, that's not, like how the world works. Yeah. I mean, does that mean the Monroe Doctrine is evil? I mean, it doesn't really pan out. And it's particularly weird, especially because in living memory, you've got people like Andropov, who I don't think was any kind of like monstrous person, but he was a dangerous individual. And he really was in the Cold War to win it. And there were frightening personages that the Russian system produced, like, well within living memory. Like, Putin is basically, he's kind of like a consummate policeman. He's kind of like this low energy functionary. who's the linchpin of united Russia, because without him it all falls apart. And it's kind of staggering the degree he's willing to tolerate provocation. You know, like, I don't understand what these people think, like, power politics entails. Like, no executive in Moscow, whether it was right, left, commie, liberal, patriotic, globalist, there's not a single man who could conceivably sit in the Kremlin who would tolerate a NATO deployment on Russia's frontier. None. That's not feasible. That's unthinkable.
Right.
I mean, so it's if your kind of epistemic prior is Russia is evil unless it allows NATO deployment at decapitation range. Like, that's kind of like saying, like, if you don't let me walk into your house and rape your wife, you're an evil person. I mean, like, I don't.
Isn't that what they're saying? I mean, that's part and parcel.
It's like there's a kind of collective insanity to this, though, because, like I said, like, I'm old enough to remember the Cold War, and there was some pretty alarming and stupid rhetoric that was bandied, but it wasn't, like, existentially illiterate and bizarre. Like, nobody said that, like, the Soviets are evil for not liking us pointing, like, Pershing 2 nuclear missiles at them.
Yeah.
I mean, like, that's not reality. That's not, like, human existence. That's not power politics.
Let me just jump in here for a second. We got a super chat. No, it's fun. It's fun. This is the show, folks. We'll get we had a super chat over on Rumble or rant on Rumble. Mr. Clockwork 7 says $10 says that Thomas 77 and Pete Quinones has had a bigger impact than anyone in the right wing over the last 3 years. Thanks for what you're both doing. You have converted many without knowing. Cheers, brothers. So thank you very much, Mr. Clockwork. Tommy, and then we'll get to Pete. Initial thoughts on Comrade Herr Vladimir Putin.
Well, actually, first I want to start with a question for Thomas, because he said a couple of things there that, like, kind of got me thinking. I remember when Obama was elected, there was a study that went out that said that the average presidential debate language was speaking at an eighth grade level. And then I didn't watch the debate the other night, but I was watching some, like, clips of it, and it feels like the language, the way that they're communicating with the populace and the electorate is at a much lower level now than it was when Obama was elected. And you saying that this is kind of like a cartoon character kind of, like, framing of Putin as a bad guy, it's almost like it's fitting within the de-evolution of the mentality of the electorate.
No, I think you're absolutely right. And I mean, it's dramatic. Like, the other day, I linked on Telegram, and I think on Twitter, I can't remember. Reagan gave a big campaign speech in Texas on Halloween in 1980. And I think it's about his best campaign speech he ever delivered. I'm not some, like, huge Reaganite, but I do believe he was the most hyper-lucid man, like, whoever sat in the Oval Office, at least, like, that we have a record of, you know, like, in terms of, you know, like, a recording. Because, I mean, even somebody, like, even these kinds of, like, great, like, Clarence Darrow types, it's one thing to, like, read stuff. It's another thing to see, like, what the delivery entails. And, I mean, Reagan's speech, it wasn't, like, heady intellectual stuff, but he ticked off about, like, five, like, strategic nuclear weapons platforms that had been canceled that, you know, Reagan's team considered essential to kind of right the strategic imbalance. He was talking about the situation contra Warsaw Pact in, like, a meaningful way. I mean, people at the time objected to it as, like, overly hawkish, but it wasn't literally retarded. You know, like, at some point, like, really, like, Clinton, who was, like, a literal clown, like, that was dramatic. Like, H.W. Bush, whatever anyone can say about him, he was a consummately serious executive, and he's one of the only post-Watergate executives who wielded, like, real power. In an Article II sense. He was kind of a drab individual and not an exciting guy. But again, there was this basic, like, intelligence behind, like, his postulates. Okay. Like, it was jarring that suddenly you get Bill Clinton, who's, like, a literal buffoon, you know, who's, like, playing saxophone in Arsenio Hall. And is kind of, like, proud of his, like, utter illiteracy on, you know, the world situation and its nuances. But I guess, to it, I really make long-winded, so I'll wrap it up in a second. But I guess what disturbs me, too, not because I mean, I'm not like a cynical individual, but I'm like realistic. And I'm not saying people should go around and act maudlin and kind of like lament the state of the wicked world. But it's like there's no understanding that if you provoke a general war with Russia, you're going to stack bodies up indefinitely. And like these are actual human beings' lives that are being snuffed out, basically so that pigs like the Bidens and so that, you know, people like the rat man of Kiev, you can like literally profit. And like that's an indefensible position. You know, if you're saying like, I hate Vladimir Putin for ambiguous reasons, I support this war being prosecuted indefinitely so that, you know, some kind of like literal criminal mafia in Kiev and the Bidens can get rich. Like, it's not a defensible position remotely. This is something that like supersedes politics.
Right.
Pete's any thoughts on it? You know, since we brought up speeches, I want to read a little bit from Putin's Empire of Lies speech, which I think will get us deeper into the Putin conversation. But Pete, any first initial thoughts on what's been said or Putin in general?
Well, basically what I know about Putin is I have a friend who has been deep diving on Putin for about 10 years now, and all he does is just read his speeches, and that's all he does. He reads everything that he puts out, and I think it's hard to say exactly, because you don't know. He's been accused of poisoning people, getting rid of his enemies, and I don't have a problem. I don't really have a problem with that, because I know who his enemies are, and you know, they always make out his enemies to be, you know, the people. Oh, this person got poisoned, and you know, they're a pillar of the community, and yeah. I don't have any pillars.
Well, unlike the United States, who never, ever, ever kills anybody.
Yeah, yeah. You know, but
the only person ever murdered was Khashoggi.
Yeah, complete accident, sort of like just these weird break-ins that happen occasionally when people hold information that might incriminate the Clintons. It's weird that way. It's an act.
Everybody drowns when they swim. Come on.
Well, sorry, Pete. What I do know about Putin, and probably the thing that I probably like the most about him, is the fact that the 90s was a complete disaster economically and culturally for Russia after communism fell. And it seems like he was the person who stepped in and said, okay, I'm just going to run this thing like an autocrat and I'm going to clean it up. And, you know, not to go any further than that right now, but it looks like he did a really good job. And it seems like after he did that, the same people who cause all the trouble here and cause all the trouble in the Middle East and cause all the trouble in Europe have been out to get him. So I know. I guess that may seem like a very simplistic take, but you know, I look at what somebody does and I look at who their enemies are, and if their enemies tend to line up with who I believe my enemies are.
Mm-hmm. I think that's the weird thing, because I don't remember, I wasn't paying much attention, but back in the 90s when Putin came to power, the messaging around him was completely different. It was all positive. It was like, here's this sort of moderate liberal-ish kind of guy.
He was picked by Bill Clinton.
Right.
He was handpicked. But
I mean, they didn't have absolute veto over who the Russians were going to select. Like, yeah, the Clintons liked him and they liked what he represented. Like, 'cause they thought United Russia was going to be this like neoliberal kind of constellation of. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it's like there's a limited pool of men to draw upon. And I think, and I don't speak Russian. I mean, let me just say that right now. So I mean, I don't have any like rare insight, but I don't think there's a way a man who didn't come up through the security apparatus, not I realize the FSB is part of the military. I don't mean the military. I mean like the police apparatus. I don't see how there was a path forward unless a man like with that basic kind of background, whose only like true like enduring patronage like was the state. And in Russia, like that carries weight in a way it doesn't here or even really in Europe. That's my take on it. The weird thing about, I mean, the way to Yeltsin contra Gorbachev is key here. And, you know, to bring it back to H.W. Bush, Bush and James Baker stated outright, we need to preserve the Soviet Union until full strategic nuclear disarmament is realized. And we got to figure out a way to resolve the nationalities and so, you know, and afford them some kind of devolved autonomy without basically what's happening today, like, happening. You know, contra them, you had the Team B coterie and kind of like their token goyish Prince Cheney, who said literally, fuck them, they lost. You know, let's tear Russia apart any way we can, seven ways from Sunday. You know, that means installing these kinds of, like, gangster regimes in Kiev, you know, just to kind of act as suicide torpedoes, you know, aimed at Moscow. We'll do that. That I had thought that after the Iraq fiasco, people had kind of wised up to how that's not sustainable. You can't dominate a system if in fact full spectrum dominance remains the impetus by just saying, like, I'm gonna promote anarchy anywhere and everywhere I can on the ground. Like, that's not feasible. I mean, aside from the fact that you're just gonna end up killing a lot of people in perpetuity, and that's a profoundly evil thing to do. You know, again, like, there's not one of the reasons why I won't abide it when people say they, like, support the Ukraine war. It's like, it's a policy devoid of strategic logic of war at all costs in perpetuity. War at all costs in perpetuity is not a policy. It's the absence of one. It's a kind of pre-rational violence targeted against people who have been slated for annihilation.
Did you see the clip of I just forgot his name, Lindsey Graham? And no, he was being interviewed, and they were saying, like, what? Because he's like, this is the best money we ever spent. We didn't even lose a soldier.
Mm. I mean, that's very Lindsey Graham of him.
Wrong. Well,
I think they lost some intelligence. Some intelligence guys when they bombed the hotel in Odessa recently, which apparently was had been converted to military intelligence and / grain deal people. And there was tons of Western.
Why is some closet case like Goyish Hishi like Lindsey Graham? Like, why is he taking on the prejudices of some, like, Ukrainian Jewish immigrant? Like, do people realize how bizarre that is?
Yeah.
Like, it'd be like...
What, money?
It's not just that. I mean, it's like the guy, he literally puts on airs of... He goes into these kinds of, like, sputtering rage fits at the enemies of the tribe. And he's, like I said, he's like some Goyish faggot from South Carolina. Like... I mean, it's like, what the fuck?
Could you tell us
like,
what I mean, you really think?
Like the look,
no, Lindsey Graham is a perennial one, because I remember even like when the Daily Show with Jon Stewart was on, and they were just kind of doing that affectation, like with like wink, wink, nudge, nudge. He's a homosexual, right? And he just became like the whipping boy. You could be as Skittles as possible. You could literally have a rainbow tattoo on your face, and it's okay to hate Lindsey Graham. It's these future
mass grave occupants like him who, you know, the demonstrative of the fact there's no accountability in the United States. I mean, there's not a single, like, Senator for Life Lindsey Graham. There's not a single man that, you know, South Carolina would prefer, like, in that seat. You know, it's like Dianne Feinstein.
Yeah, I was just going
to
say.
Like the state of
everybody
California.
Everybody wants, all the, they don't everybody want some, in the Senate wants to be Dianne Feinstein.
Yeah, like Senator
for Life. We could all just say F for Dianne Feinstein. Just like, yeah, she has
F,
been reposed.
F's in the chat, folks.
But it's you know what's really funny is you never hear whenever people talk about Putin, though, is they never discuss the 2011 snow revolution that took place in Russia and how long and the investigation that took place. And once 2014 and Maidan happened and the recordings of Victoria Nuland coming out saying, well, this is our guy and we're going to pick this guy and this is who we're going to put in place. And it was shortly after that, it was in 2015, that Putin actually stepped up. He kicked out all the NGOs out of Russia, USAID, all the NGOs. And now who's in charge of USAID other than Cass Sunstein, who is, you know, the head of like Barack Obama's diplomatic, right, you know, arm. And so it's this complete nepotistic kind of like conglomerate they got going on. And Putin identified that, and they had no choice but to turn up the heat on Putin. And so like people like Lindsey Graham, they adhere to this the strategy of NGOs overthrowing governments. And so he's stuck in a, like a rock in a hard place, because he wants to be Donald Trump's best friend, but he also wants to support the all the funding and money going to Ukraine. But
that's if I could jump in for a sec. Sorry. Yeah, no. Go ahead, Thomas.
No, it's just bizarre. Like I said, to see some like goyish queer, like literally like affecting those kinds of prejudices. Like I've called like lesser iterations of that creature out on that, and they give me like a dumb kind of deer in headlights look. It's just, it's really, really, really strange.
He's like Kevin Spacey's character from Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil. Like, exactly, yeah. 100. Defending the tribe, going out of his way to defend the tribe. Yeah.
You want some sweet tea with that bagel and lox? Just some sweet tea. Okay, so
if I could interject, because again, let's play like for.
I do get by with the affections of strangers. My lord. My goodness.
So let's say pretend like there are a couple people watching here who haven't paid attention to our month of leading up to this or the war or anything. If we could give a basic, at least each of your guys' opinions on what started this, obviously the war in Ukraine is the thing that's brought attention to Putin and made him the new Hitler.
Actually, not for me. My wife's the one who brought attention to Putin. For me, she thinks he's the hottest thing that ever been.
He rode that bear, and she was all
in. Yeah, she's all in on Putin, man. Buck, you got competition, buddy.
Oh shit!
Let's start with this. Hang on, I see what you're doing, Mark. Let's start with it. I'm going to read a little selection from this is Putin's Empire of Lies speech. The layup to what I'm about to read is he goes through the attacks on Belgrade, attacks on Syria, attacks on Iraq, and lays out a foundation of saying like these are
speaking of like from the West. You mean like what
yeah, and he's basically laying. He basically just lays out. I won't read the whole thing because it's lengthy. But he basically lays out those three main cases, simply saying like this is where the West is breaking international law, and he gets to this point, and then he brings it back to Russia. Let me just read it from here. Overall, it appears that nearly everywhere in many regions of the world where the United States brought its law and order, this created bloody non-healing wounds and the curse of international terrorism and extremism. I've only mentioned the most glaring but far from only examples of disregard for international law. This array includes promises not to expand NATO eastwards even by an inch. To reiterate, they have deceived us, or to put it simply, they have played us. Surely one often hears that politics is a dirty business. It could be, but it shouldn't be as dirty as it is now. Not to such an extent. This type of con artist behavior is contrary not only to the principles of international relations, but also and above all to the generally accepted norms of morality and ethics. Where is justice and truth here? Just lies and hypocrisy all around. Hang on, let me just do this one. Incidentally, U.S. politicians, political scientists, and journalists write and say that the veritable empire of lies has been created inside the United States in recent years. It is hard to disagree with this. It is really so. But one should not be modest about it. The United States is still a great country and a system-forming power. All of its satellites not only humbly and obediently say yes and parrot it at the slightest pretext, but also imitate its behavior and enthusiastically accept the rules it is offering them. Therefore, one can say with good reason and confidence that the whole so-called Western bloc formed by the United States in its own image and likeness is, in its entirety, the very same empire of lies. So, when I first heard that speech, and again, this is what kind of where I was coming up to this Occam razor with Putin, mentally, on a personal level. And I heard him say that speech, and first of all, I was like, where's the lie? And also that he's not making that speech just for the West or for Russians. He's making that for essentially BRICS. He's making that to all the global South, to all, to Poland, Romania, everyone who's listening. And he's basically making this statement, and this is the battle line. It's almost like, you don't have to like me. You don't even have to like Russia. You have our problems. It's fine. But look at this. This is who you're siding with. And then he goes on the speech to cite transgenderism, to cite, you know, all the things, right? The decline of morality in the West. And it's basically a put up or shut up decree to, I think, Eastern Europe primarily, because Slavics are different people. Maybe we can get to that. To understand Putin is to understand Russians. And that's, I don't think there's enough realism left in the West to even comprehend a Slavic mentality of how the world works. It's as alien as, it's more alien than Asians at this point. But this was a speech, when I heard it, I was like, this is a turning point. Not just in terms of global geopolitics, but even as a turning point for Putin himself, where he's making a very clear delineation of like which way Western man, and not just and which way global empire.
Well, or which way Eastern, what do you man. Want? It's kind of that.
Speech, which way? Right? Like, which way man in general? Like, what are you going to side with? You know. And anyway,
I was going to give my sort of feeling about Putin, and again, I don't know. I could definitely be more educated on the subject, but the way I've always seen it is kind of like, at the end of the day, he's to the subject friend or fed. He's a friend to at least some. Sorry, I live downtown. He's Russian, and there's always going to be that cultural difference there, where you can't really, like, I could never put myself really inside the Russian mindset. Looks like we have one in the chat here, and he's bringing up stuff that's completely foreign to me. So I could say, like, okay, well, there's a difference. Even if you could say we're the aggressor, or NATO is the aggressor, not us, but the regime that we're under.
Proxy, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm half baked on
the end of the day. It doesn't. I mean, yeah, you're right. The intended audience of that speech is BRICS. I mean, the issue with Putin is that, I mean, frankly, he doesn't go far enough. Things never should have been permitted to get to this point in the Ukraine situation. And again, this is something that supersedes politics. Like, Putin's point is that there's this pattern of grotesque violence at scale against basically everybody else that's practiced by the Zionist regime here in America. Mm-hmm. It arbitrarily slates people for annihilation. Even the people who are supposedly adjacent and allied in strategic terms, if we can even speak of there even being that, you know, basic modicum of rationale to the policy course of the Department of State and the Pentagon and the executive branch as a whole. But I mean, even states that the regime considers friendlies, there's constant, incessant, unending cultural aggression that these people are availed to in a planetary capacity, the purpose of which is to annihilate the human capacity for a historical identitarian understanding of self and the human condition. Okay. And if you remove people's ability to live historically, you're not just robbing them of meaningful life. You know, you're basically robbing them of the capacity for like real, for moral consensus at scale, but also kind of like intimacy, like in a more like, you know, in a more localized capacity. This is incredibly insidious. This is far more insidious than anything the Soviet Union did. Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm not resorting to histrionics or hyperbole. This is a regime that is trying to annihilate aspects of the human being that are essential to the human being. Okay. And, when it, it's to Putin's point, it suggests that it is the single arbiter of law, that it represents all of humanity and its postulates, that it is beyond reproach. And again, what it does is it, since 1991, it has massacred thousands, if not millions of people, for the most trivial of reasons, in many cases. In other cases, it has done so quite literally to eradicate other cultures that it views as uniquely resistant to the social engineering regime of removing people's ability to live historically and practice culture with a capital C.
Or not just 1990, like 1940. Right? I mean, if you want
to go back, the New Deal regime is an abomination.
Directly,
but, I'm speaking from what Putin's, the bound rationale, the parameters of his speech and what he's addressing. And, you know, beyond that, that's why what's being done to Russia, even if you're not Russian and don't, you know, have any connection to the Slavic cultures or anything. Russia is under assault because Russia will, they won't allow children to become transgendered. Okay. They refuse to declare that sodomy is a sacrament. They refuse to declare that, you know, white people are the source of all the problems in the world. So we've got to ethnically cleanse ourselves or become mulattoes of some sort. Okay. It's irrelevant what anybody thinks about Russia because that perspective is literally anti-human. Okay. And anybody who doesn't resist it to the fullest extent of their abilities while remaining within the law, I'm not advocating terrorism. Anybody who refuses to do that or anybody who denies the severity of this existential struggle, they're essentially like a coolie. Okay. Or there's somebody who's afflicted with a kind of Stockholm syndrome, of the deepest kind of psychological sort. So I think if anything, Putin doesn't go.
Well, that's most people right now. I mean,
just yeah, I agree.
COVID, look at everything. It's beyond.
Yeah.
Did y'all see that speech? I think it was in front of the UN. It was like the prime minister of Poland or someone like that. And they asked
the one someone just linked in the chat.
I don't know. I don't see the chat.
You have on the left of your screen, you should have private chat versus comments. If you click comments, you'll see it.
Oh, okay.
Took me a year to learn that. I'm not lying.
Calm your chest, Mark.
It was world changing. Yeah.
Yeah. It'd probably distract me too much. I probably wouldn't be able to speak. So,
sorry.
but this guy, they asked him, they said, how many refugees have y'all allowed into your country? And he was just like zero. And he was like proud of it. He's like zero. We allowed none. And they're like, you haven't allowed any refugees into your country. How can you be so proud of that? He said, well, Ukrainian refugees we've allowed, but no Muslims. I made a promise to the people of Poland that we weren't going to inflict them with the issues that come with allowing Muslim refugees into the country. And they're like, yeah, but that's like bigoted. You can't be like that, basically, is what they're saying. He's like, yeah, but how many terrorist attacks have you seen in Poland? None. Mm-hmm. It doesn't happen here. He goes, so you can call me a bigot. You can call me a racist. You can call me a populist. You can call me a nationalist. You can call me whatever you want. I'm keeping true to my promise to my family and to my country that we're going to protect them.
Well, it's the number one rule. Look at what's going on right now with GB News and Lawrence Fox, right? The rule is do what they want and get called a racist, or do what you want and get called a racist.
Yeah.
Well, look, as Dugin said in The Great Awakening versus the Great Reset, which anyone watching this should go back and watch that whole month of streams. He says in chapter two, they finish off his section on liberalism. It's like, it's nothing personal. You can believe whatever you want as long as it's liberal. As long as you believe in liberalism, exactly, it's, yeah, you can believe in it. And that's what the Western order is based around.
And he also said something not in that book, but he also said something that kind of co-signs on what Thomas 77 was just saying, was that he believed Putin should have invaded Ukraine in 2014. And by not doing so, that he showed a sign of weakness, that once their investigation was complete about Maidan and they understood that the United States was behind not only Maidan, but the Snow Revolution of 2011, that should have been the signal to Putin to invade Ukraine in 2014.
Okay,
and so that it was a sign of weakness not to do it.
Can I jump in with a question there? Because this is what I've been trying to figure out, is what is, like, if you look at the global order, the Great Reset, the WF, it looks to me, at least on a superficial level, that like everything Putin's doing kind of goes along with what they want. Like, they really want this war. They really want the excuse for inflation. It lines up with a lot of their incentives. And so what is Putin's motivation, and what is his end game, and what is what is winning for Putin that doesn't align with the globalist goals?
I mean, it's obvious. One of the reasons for the escalation and hostilities against Russia was because the Russians intervened on behalf of the Syrian Baath and Hezbollah and defeated, the terrorist elements that America and Israel were employing to try and overthrow Syria. I mean, Putin's doing everything he should be doing. What he's not doing is going far enough.
For who? Like, who benefits?
Well, if
NATO deploys on your border at the decapitation range, you can either assault and remedy that problem, or you're finished as a country and as a people. Because it means that at any time, you can literally be slaughtered.
But do you think that he believes that the assault remedies the problem?
It's not what he believes.
Is he going to beat NATO?
You have to act. If I point a gun at you, you can do nothing, or you can disarm me.
Yeah, one way or the other, they're trying to take the resources of Russia, right? You can go back to the 1970s when Zbigniew Brzezinski wrote The Grand Chessboard, and you can read all about it. He breaks down the world into different segments. And when he gets to Eurasia, right, and he's talking about Kazakhstan and Ukraine, and all he's talking about is natural gas, oil and natural gas. That's all he's
fertilizer.
Talking about. If Putin wouldn't have acted, then they just take it. If he does act, then at least he has a chance to fight back against them taking it, right?
And it's also the catalyst for the attempted destruction of Russia. I mean, there's profits to be had. And as true, economies of shortage set in globally towards the end of this century, Central Asia is going to be highly coveted in a grand chessboard kind of way. But that's not the primary catalyst for the endless assault on Russia. The tribe hates Russia. They literally hate Russia. In existential terms, they want it to be destroyed.
Yeah.
That's part of their entire cultural war.
Centuries.
It's not new.
Yeah.
Is that because it's probably the kind of the epitome of a nationalist state?
No, it's because there's a tragic history between the tribe and the Russians that goes back centuries. And
we had touched on this on the last episode with Pete. I mean, they want to rebuild Khazaria, basically.
There's two groups of traditionally here. We have the Kiev Rus, and you have the Muscovite Rus. And if you want to talk about pre-schism, even pre-orthodoxy within Russia, there's your first schism. And these two tribes, basically the Kiev Rus and the Muscovite Rus, is where you get this whole division line. Mm. And the Kiev Rus is where you get I need to get a bell ring ring peoples, tribes, right? The tribes came from are primarily from the Kiev Rus, and the Muscovite Rus are what we think of as classic Slavs. And then you have Poles who are just dying to be just glory holing Europe for some reason. But along with the Latvians and Estonians, because they just don't have a personal identity. And I can say that because I'm part Polish. But understand all this stuff, you have to rewind it 2,000 years to even get to the starting point of where all this animosity starts from, and flash forward it 2,000 years, and you get to this point where you have what seems like completely irrational hatred for one whole side, because it's lost rationale. It's now into an absolute identity. Identity politics with nukes.
So it's like Eastern European Shia and Sunni. That's basically what you were dealing with.
Okay. So what if we go down that pathway? So the goal is an eternal blood libel going back centuries. Why aren't they just declaring war on Russia? Why just do this bullshit money laundering, kill the Ukrainians scheme? Why not attack Russia full out? Why not? If we know that they'll lie, we know they'll make any excuse for war. They didn't have one to go to Iraq.
Do you really believe that Joe Biden could put in a call to Berlin, demand that the Bundesrepublik mobilize all military-age males, give NATO an order to assault Russia with armored columns, if necessary, nuclear, biological, and chemical weapons, kill 5 million Russians, kill 1 million Europeans, not stop until they go to Moscow, and then annihilate Russia's ability to reconstitute, including nuclear assault if necessary. The odds of that happening are zero. There's no chance of that happening. That's why NATO has no credibility. So
what's the goal?
What they have, and you know, the whole purpose of NATO is, you know, to permanently decouple Germany from Russia, so that Europe can never be free of U.S. occupation, and to draw Russia into this kind of like permanent state of hostilities on its frontiers, and subject it to a death by a thousand cuts.
Make Ukraine the new Afghanistan.
Yeah,
they've even said that.
Yeah,
and I mean, Israel.
That's what's twisted about these Ukrainians who like think they're national socialists. They're like literally slaughtering their own people on orders of a Zionist, incident to a war whose entire purpose basically is to like crush the white race in its homeland by like permanently preventing like any kind of concord between like Germany and Russia. Yeah. Like these guys are literal race traitors. You know, that's why I'm not happy to hear about anybody dying, but you know, Dugin is right when he says that like Ukraine's got to be utterly smashed so they can like never rise again, because these people are like a mad dog, and like they've been mind warped or whatever, or like deformed to the point that they can't like, where the Russians can't like live with them on their frontier and be safe any longer. And that's a tragic situation, but you know, they made their own bed, and that's the way it is.
Pete, any ideas, any thoughts?
I mean, it seems like after the Cold War ended, the tribe decided that they were going to go after the Muslims and do as much damage in the Muslim world as possible. I see this, and people, I mean, Thomas, if you want to contradict me on this, I mean, this is a bonus. This is Christians killing Christians. And I
that's
mean,
a big part of it. I mean, the problem with the tribes got in, the tribe lost huge in the Near East. I mean, they still are. And part of that, I mean, the Russians undertook a very heroic mission in, helping the Shia and the Alawites and the Christians, you know, fight off, you know, American and Jewish terrorism in Syria. But that was kind of like the nail in the coffin of, you know, of the Middle East enterprise. That the Pentagon and the Torn Estate and Tel Aviv wanted to realize. At the same time, the primary client, Syria is like really the primary client of Russia. You know, like Syria doesn't seem like an important country, like in absolute terms, but within like the paradigm of, you know, like Israel's rationale for what it deems important, like Syria has like a huge significance, and so does the Levant. The loss that America and Israel took in Syria was a huge catalyst for this like massive escalation in Ukraine. It would not have happened that way, like had that not happened. It would have remained this kind of like low intensity fight. I mean, really, it's not low intensity. The people in the Donbass were getting killed, but it wouldn't. You know, this was kind of like among other things, it was like a rookie mistake to like install this like fool Zelensky and then just say like, you know, we're gonna go all in some kind of, we're gonna make ourselves into a suicide torpedo and like smash ourselves on Ivan. Like that doesn't. It's like, okay, so now Ukraine's a rump state. Now the armed forces of the Russian Federation are, you know, however many kilometers west of where they were in January 2022. Russia's arguably got like the most like battle hardened army on this planet at present, and Putin basically now like nothing is gonna remove him from office until he dies.
Thomas, let's just jump in. Let's dig into that for a second, because I know whenever we've said this, I always get comments and everyone's like spurs the hell out about this idea that Russia is now the most battle hardened, most prepared army in the world. Let's dig into that for a second, because I think people don't understand the idea of battle preparedness and battle readiness and just having an army. Because there's a lot of talk now where it's like saying, well, Poland has, you know, X number 100,000 troops that they're
yeah, none of whom have heard a shot fired an Jaeger.
Well, exactly, and none of them has ever used these weapons outside of training, and this is becomes a critical moment. Like this is, I remember you talking. Here's where I shine everyone's shoes a little bit. Anyone watching this should go check out Pete Canona's show, talking with Thomas, especially about World War II and Operation Barbarossa and that whole segment. And then you guys are just doing World War I. And there's a lot of tie-ins that we're talking about here that I think will get explored more on that show. Sorry, I hope I'm not boring Pete here. He looks like he's falling asleep. Sorry. So I think what gets missed here is the idea of how even the Soviets turned it back, turned the tides on Germany, was because of that sort of like losing people, but also training their people, taking sustainable losses and training their people up so that they became better and better and better at fighting that war.
Also, I mean, even if the Russian army is not particularly good. Like, that's not what we're talking about. Like, it's, and the fact is, too, there's a lot of emergent weapons. Whether they're talking about standoff weapons, whether they're talking about, you know, these like little, like, in theater drones, there's a lot of like weapons platforms that haven't really been used yet by anybody but the Russians. And I mean, but to be fair, you know, like the Op 4 that they're dealing with in Ukraine. But I mean, it's like that confers a huge advantage if your people, and again, it's people, this isn't like a video game. It's not about like who is the best or whether like the Russian Armed Forces are particularly good or not. You know, you've got like a cadre of people, you know, been in a heavy combined arms action, you know, for going on 2 years. I mean, that confers a huge advantage, you know, for no other reason that they're comfortable fighting, with these, you know, utilizing these platforms and like an integrated, like operational capacity, you know, like at battalion level and like at theater level. And it's also too, like everybody says, I mean, the Russian army is kind of a mess, but it's always kind of a mess. And like people, that's what everybody says. That's what everybody says every time the Russians go to war, but it's like somehow when the Russians go to war, like it's like utterly devastates like whoever they go to war with. I mean, it's going to war with Russia is a terrible idea. You know, and it doesn't
seem to go well historically.
It's like again, like I said, like the only way NATO would have credibility is if, as it did in 1985, if the President of the United States could give an order downrange to Berlin, you know, to mobilize, and upon receiving that order, the Bundeswehr would immediately do it, and essentially at a moment's notice, like assault the Russian army with combined arms and again like tactical nuclear weapons if need be. Okay, I mean that's what it takes. You know, people seem like, oh, the Russians suck. That's not the point. I don't really particularly, I mean, I think history kind of contradicts that anyway. I mean, they were sitting in Berlin for 50 years. I mean, if they were like a bunch of pussies or like idiots, I don't think they could have pulled that off. I mean, you could say like, okay, it took, they lost a million, they took a million KIA, you know, just in the Battle of Berlin alone, like that's horrific attrition, and that wouldn't be acceptable to most cultures, but that makes them kind of all the more game. You know,
so there's a history to it. Hang on, Mark. There's a history to it, where it's like you had Cossacks in Paris during the Napoleonic Wars. Like this is not unprecedented that Russia's been able to take in borders. It's also history keeps telling us that outside of, let's say, a Trotskyite, some sort of romanticized vision of global communism, the Russians have never had a global ambition, really. No. Like there's no evidence of that. At most, they want to take over some parts of continental Europe to fix up their geographic. Look, kind
if
of
they can
issue.
Deploy in theater, and in theater meaning their immediate frontier, probably about, you know, like 300 kilometers beyond that. Like if they can deploy at scale, like at a moment's notice, like within that paradigm.
Well, let's say up to Germany. Let's say up to the borders of Germany and Romania, Poland, like that whole Eastern Bloc region up into Croatia. Like that's their general sphere of influence.
No, exactly. That, yeah. And it doesn't, it's also like the metrics are off too. I don't want to turn this into some like gear queer conversation, but it's like what exactly you're are right. America's 14 aircraft carriers for? Like it's kind of like World War II force structure on steroids. That's not the way you fight wars anymore. No. I mean, so what should Russia be doing? Like building aircraft carriers that they can like tool around in and like claim that they're the greatest military in the world? Like I mean Russia if Russian troops are getting the gear they need, and again, like if they can. You know,
here's the thing to watch.
Yeah.
Here's the thing to watch, and this kind of speaks to your point, Thomas, about if Putin's going too far or not too far in this war. what I've been saying is since the very start and watching how the formations have been developing, it's like Odessa is the key. Like the Odessa is the linchpin. When they take Odessa, and it's now a when, it's not a if, it's when they take Odessa, it's over. Like it's over, even if the fighting continues, even if they extend it into taking Kiev or make Kiev the new Berlin or whatever the hell this new frontier and borders are going to be, and whatever parts of Ukraine just get become a suburb of Poland, whatever that is, doesn't really matter. Odessa is the thing. When they take Odessa, which is I think really what Putin's after, because that then takes the entire.
What does that get him? What does that end? Because like my question, I'm going to jump in.
That gets him everything. What are you talking about? That gets him everything. That gets him the entire Sea of Azov. That gets him the entire Black Sea. That gets him.
That eliminates NATO. The blood libel is gone, and like this is what I don't understand.
No. Geographically, it cures all their problems.
Fine, but you're going to have to maintain it. You're going to have to support it. And this is what I don't understand, because that helped me clarify a few things. But when I'm looking, like Putin is ex-FSB, which is sort of the hereditary following of the KGB. And if you look at, I guess there was a weird sort of shift. And again, this is my retarded analysis, but tell me if I'm even close. If right in the West right now, we're living with, if you follow, you know, Yuri Bezmenov, we're living with the follow-on of what was non-kinetic warfare against the West, the slow march through the institutions. And someone who should be aware of the tactical approach. What I don't understand is why is Putin kind of playing this kinetic game instead of the smart one? And what is the goal? Okay, so great, you take Odessa, you've got your ports. What's the long-term strategy for someone who should know better?
Military problems aren't political ones. Again, if a man's pointing a gun at you, you have to disarm him and or kill him. You don't say like, well, what if this guy's family, you know, gets insinuated into ABC, and like, what if his brother becomes the mayor? You say, no, I'm gonna disarm him and kill him because he's pointing a gun at me.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else? Pete?
If Odessa falls, and you say that you believe Odessa's going to fall, that's the reaction to that from the West is what's going to be the most important thing. As Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson has pointed out, they've been building Jewish communities inside Odessa now for two decades. I mean, there's more synagogues there, I think, than there are in like Jerusalem and Tel Aviv combined.
Really?
And so if it falls, how does the West react to that?
Because
if their plan is to rebuild Khazaria, like Dr. Johnson believes, and he has people on the ground there that he talks to all the time, he has actual figures on the dead. Then how does the West react to that if Odessa falls under Russian control?
Well, I mean, there's not a military solution to Ukraine's ambitions. There never has been. There never will be. It's not. There's no possibility there.
And which end?
Ukraine has no military path to victory. Right, so, right. I mean, the West will have to deal with reality at some point.
Yeah, but why won't they just declare all out war? Like, is there a way?
It's not feasible. Again, I mean, what is Biden going to do? Like, call Berlin and say we're gonna wage total, if necessary, nuclear war against the Russian Federation? That's unthinkable.
Read the latest War College paper that came out. I think I linked it on my episode with Lee Enfield. I mean, the United States right now could not get in a ground war.
Why are they wasting their time? Just for the cash?
I don't.
World war by proxy.
Yeah, but what's the? They're not stupid.
Yeah, they are.
No, they are. No, honestly, Mark, here's the crazy thing.
Yeah, okay.
Like, again, I've been following this, like, and I've been listening to everyone from across the aisle, from like Douglas McGregor, I still say, does some of the best analysis on this. And I guarantee you, it's like big military heads, commentators in the U.S. are all pointed and saying, this is fucking retarded. Like, this is seriously stupid. Mm-hmm. And yet they keep doing it because they've just said, this is plan A. There is no plan B. Ukraine was earmarked for the 2030 WEF. And Tommy, you can talk about this. like they were earmarked as a new breadbasket. That's why they moved. That's what they're doing to the Dutch farmers. They're moving all that whole Dutch agriculture over to Ukraine. That was what is earmarked. There is no plan B.
Well,
there
is it's nothing. Just as simple as the contractors are getting their money and they're funding their campaigns. And that's
do you honestly think that there's no repercussions coming back to the United States? If you look at, all right, so you look at who's Russia's number one ally in the world right now?
China.
What was China's plan when China and Russia were looking at going to war with each other? What was their plan to defeat Russia? Their plan was to send 100,000 people into Russia's border illegally, crossing the border, and then surrender and be taken captured every day. 100,000 people every day. That's 500,000 every week.
So it's like, right? Mexico border.
Exactly. Where do you think that funding is coming from? Who do you think's funding the cartels?
The tribe.
There you go. So this complete depletion of Russia using Ukraine as a proxy, Mexico and Venezuela and South America is all being used as proxies against the United States as well.
Yeah.
And we can't fool ourselves about it. We have
So then they're not stupid.
No, they're not stupid. They're collapsing our economy while they're trying to collapse the Russian economy. They're doing the Russian economy militarily. They're doing us through our liberalism.
Mm. It's stupid because they can't win militarily.
Mm. Yeah.
But what does that matter? Since when have you, that's what I was saying with my allusion back to the KGB, Bezmenov, right? He's like, it's not, this isn't James Bond.
Yeah, but this is the Anglo-American establishment getting its pretty little claws out all over the place and finding the weaknesses within these countries and then attacking the countries in that way. No, turn your mic back on. I want to hear what she has to say. It's probably smarter than what I have to say anyway.
She's going to put us to shame.
She's doing Bluey commentary, so. No, but okay, so hang on, but since Tommy, we have you here, and there's been, I think, confusion about the Orthodox position on this whole thing. Because one of the big casualties in this war, and certainly what one of the more interesting aspects of this war, has been the reaction to Russian Orthodoxy, both in Ukraine and globally. Mm-hmm. And there's even within the Orthodox communities, sort of this awkwardness about accepting this. Like, some people are very pro the idea of a new Holy Russia being established and Novi Russia possibly being reestablished. And those kind of concepts, which, you know, and if you think about it, this in sort of Orthodox history or especially Russian Orthodox history, the sort of Novorossiya, the Holy Russian Empire was Belorussia, Ukraine, and Russia being the triumvirate, essentially. So now there's a lot of people thinking that this is going to be a return to this. Let's get your thoughts on that, Tommy. Like, let's dive a little bit into, because we've skirted around in the talks about Dugin. It's like, what are your thoughts from an Orthodox perspective on all this?
So the way I look at it is we have kind of like this, just like in every faith, whether you look at Catholicism, you look at Protestantism, wherever you're looking into the Christian faiths, you're going to have this intermingling of liberalism into the faith, and you're going to have some of these voices. And so what I like to do is I like to kind of focus on the more traditional voices and the way they look at it, right? And the way they look at it is that there are patriarchs like Bartholomew who are overstepping their bounds and causing divisions within the Orthodox Church based upon what's going on in Russia. There are Orthodox that are or self-proclaiming Orthodox that are giving up monasteries in Ukraine and taking it away from traditional Orthodox monks and handing it over to these more liberal Orthodox kind of ideals. So there's an inner struggle within the Orthodox community too, as far as what's going on. And it's really clear. Beginning to look close to kind of the Catholic division, where you kind of have this like Novus Ordo kind of branch, and then you have the traditional branch, and they're kind of fighting for power there. And that's kind of what I see within
Orthodox. There's only a Novus Ordo branch. There is no traditional branch. The traditional branch has no power. They just talk a lot on social media.
Well, in Orthodoxy, it's the exact opposite. In Orthodoxy, the traditional branch actually has more power than the Novus Ordo, so to speak. I don't know what you would call it in Greek. I don't speak Greek. So, but it would be the opposite in Orthodoxy. The traditional branch would have more of the power, but the louder voices are coming from the more liberal side of it. And this is where you get all this hate for, you know, Father Peter Hears, Father John Whiteford, and these more traditional Orthodox priests that are out there speaking out on social media, trying to save the church from this kind of infusion of liberalism into the church and remain faithful to the practices and the old traditions. And so the Russian-Ukraine war has given an opening for these factions to start fighting out in the open. And you can kind of watch this battle take place. So I would think, I don't know enough about like calling Russia like this, like Holy Land or anything. I've heard it. I've heard people talk about it. I don't know enough about that. I would suggest you get like Father John Whiteford on to talk about that, if you're really interested in talking about that. And if you need his contact information, I'll get you in touch with him. I've had him on my podcast before as well.
Well, here's the crux of it. There is a religious genocide going on in Ukraine right now, with the Kiev Lavra especially. One of the most despicable things in the world is to identify these monks, many of whom have taken vows of silence, who are living in caves as monastics, who have no connection with internet, outside world, have no idea about politics whatsoever, and to call them Russian agents because they happen to share a religion that they've identified as the head of that religion is in Moscow, which is also bullshit, because that's not how that works.
That's why these Ukrainian guys are race traitors. I mean, like, again, like whatever the issues between like Russians and Ukrainians, and there are some like autochthonic issues there, you don't kill fellow Slavs in order of a fucking Jew. I mean, that's never defensible.
Dang, you know, like, over. That ends the conversation.
Yeah, there's no scenario where that's defensible in any way, shape, or form.
Well, yeah, I mean, yes and no. I mean, okay. Yes, I agree with you. My grandfather, when I was Polish-Ukrainian, when I was very young, he told me, he's like, always beware, be very careful. When someone comes up to you and goes, my Russian brother, and slaps you on the back, he goes, watch out for the knife. So there's awareness within, let's say, I'll call them Slavics, just as like, I know everyone has their own little thing, right? You say Slavic and go, oh, whatever. I refuse to use Eastern European because there's nothing European about Eastern Europeans. But there is a realism there. There is a recognition within our groups that there is a high degree of deception.
I understand that
happens within those groups. I'm sure that happens everywhere, right?
No, I understand that, and I don't like it when Wignats come at me like, oh, hey, I'm a Wood too, like, so I have automatic credibility with you. But again, right, what the Ukrainians are doing, that'd be like if a white dude clicked up with Black Lives Matter and started like fucking stomping the fuck out of white people, and like while doing it saying he's a Nazi. Like, you don't side with the enemies of your people.
But this is the whole point of the show. This is the whole point. When I say things like, I got,
you better pay attention, Daddy.
I know. When I say things like this show is confronting people's priors, that's what I really mean. It's these conversations that we have to have. And thank you for everyone who's been watching and responding and commenting, and please like and share and get us to 1,000 subscribers on YouTube and all the things, or all that stuff.
Halfway there.
We're almost there. And I know some people have hard outs, and I don't want to keep everyone forever. So we'll keep anyone who wants to stay on. We want to keep on talking. We can keep on talking. But I find these are the conversations that are important. We're never going to solve this. Before everyone leaves, you can cast your vote, friend or fed, you know, for those who care about that stuff. The show's not about that. The conversation's not about that. The conversation's this. You need to, I fervently believe that it's fine to believe what you believe as long as you understand why you believe it. And 99% of what we say we believe is based on bullshit. And it's because we just repeated it. We've repeated common, easy lies that have been handed down to us by our parents or by our civilization or by news and teachers and whatever have you. And this is getting into our October is going to be conspiracy theory month. We're going to be doing a slave conspiracy theory shows leading up to Alex Jones, friend or fed at the end of that. And one of the things that I remember with Mark, we talked about flat earth very early on, many years ago. And I was firmly against it, but I came away from that conversation going, it's good to examine why you think this, because why do you believe this is based on what you've been told, and you've done no examination of it. No one's never really thought, I think there's a lot of people with the Ukrainian flag in their bio who's never thought anything about anything, considering Eastern Europe, Russia, Putin, Ukraine, anything. And that's how you get, and that's just how we started this.
Well, like I said,
you get Ukrainian Nazis getting
exactly
Canadian parliament.
Like, well, that's my perspective. Is like I don't think we're going to solve this problem, but I'd like to understand it, and that's why I really enjoy this show, and I really appreciate the three of you coming on, because the only way you get to understand something is to speak to the smartest people you know and get their opinions on it. And I think we're so unbelievably blessed.
And now we get to have the three of you on our show. And now we get to say collectively that Adam Patrick is fake and gay for not coming on.
We've always known that.
So. I've got no position on this.
It's your own fault. You're not here to defend yourself.
Look, I will.
I gotta raise up here because I've got. Forgive me.
Closing. We'll go around the horn. Tommy, we'll start with you. Then Thomas. Then Pete. Closing thoughts, arguments, votes on friend or fed Putin. We'll keep it short, and then please plug your shows. Everything is linked in the description below, but we'll have it from the men themselves.
I always have trouble saying any elitist is a friend, but there are some friendlier than others, and I would venture to say that Putin is one of the on the friendlier side. They're always going to have their own agendas that are not going to match up with like a blue collar guy like me. It's just the way it is, and we're never going to see eye to eye. But as far as friend or fed, I'm not a Putin apologist, but I do understand where he's coming from, and I kind of get his point of view as far as wanting to save his nation and actually be autonomous against this kind of a world order, this liberal world order that's been put in place since World War II. And I don't necessarily blame him for the actions he's taken. I do have to go because my dogs are going batshit crazy because my wife's not here. It's just me. So sorry about that. But yeah,
I had to go shut mine up.
Yeah. Like that's where I went a while ago. I had to go let them outside because they wanted to chase coyotes because there were coyotes in my yard again. And now they want back in the house.
We didn't get any duck stories from you, Tommy, on this one. Sorry.
I only have one duck left. All my other ducks have been eaten by coyotes, and now they've been trying to smash and grab my chickens, and my dogs are doing their damnedest to keep the coyotes out of the yard, and they're doing a pretty decent job.
We have one duck. We have one duck on the farm that's basically the rape bitch. She's looking scrawny, and we figure she's just getting trained by all the other ducks. And we thought about moving her to the other pen with the other ducks. We're like, she's going to get trained harder.
Well, I don't know if y'all heard that like, crash into my window a second ago. That was one of my roosters laying the wood down to one of my chickens, and she was like, "Fuck!" and jumping out from under him. So
I love Thomas's face right now. He's like, where have we gone in this conversation? Thomas 777.
It's almost over, Thomas.
Final thoughts on Vladimir Putin, And please plug all your things.
He's definitely the most significant statesman since 1989 on the world stage. I mean, that's inarguable. And in a lot of ways, he's an admirable guy. In other ways, it's unfortunate that I don't think he's the best. He's definitely the best man that the Russian system has produced since Andropov. I realize the current system is not the same as what preceded it, but Putin is of the generation that spanned both of those structures. So comparatively, I think he's definitely one of the best Russian executives of the modern era. I mean, in objective terms, his lack of actual military experience has hurt Russian strategic interests. As is the last time Russia had a truly deep kind of understanding of the geostrategic situation was when there was something of a trifecta in the executive role of Andropov, Ustinov, and Gromyko. Lavrov kind of reminds me of those types, but I don't think Putin gives him a particularly high degree of respect. Whoever succeeds Putin, hopefully, he can maintain the consensus that substantiates United Russia, because I believe I'm not some regional studies expert, and again, I don't speak Russian, but I believe that United Russia is something of a fragile coalition absent Putin. But yeah, he's definitely the only statesman really worthy of the title today on the global stage. I think Bashar Assad is a great man, and he's a hero of mine. Like, if I could meet any world leader, I'd want to meet Bashar Assad. Hell yeah. But obviously, he doesn't wield anywhere near the kind of power that somebody like Mr. Putin does. But no, Putin's definitely a great man in historical terms, and thank God it's the line in the sand was drawn too late. But I mean, thank God it was drawn, and thank God the Russian people are resisting Zionist tyranny. It's a threat, quite literally, to all of humanity, which might sound histrionic, but I can assure you I'm being entirely serious. That's all I got on that.
Pete?
I like that Thomas said that whatever man is going to replace Putin, because if a woman replaced Putin, then we know that Russia's dead. And I'm not even kidding. I mean, the fact that we have women leaders in this world in the West should tell you about where we are in history.
Yeah,
you don't think Kamala could cut it?
I think Hillary Clinton could probably speak Russian.
I do want to say this, as somebody who is half Pole, Ukrainian, Eastern European. Rightly understood, Russians and Poles need to understand who one of their greatest, maybe their greatest enemy has been for the last 400 to 700 years. It's the same enemy that Spain put up with for 700 years, and you have to be able to. If the Poles and the Russians could just get along and gather around a common enemy, this could stop. Things like this could stop, not rather easily, but it would be a lot easier to do. Putin, everybody wants to talk about who's the most based person on Twitter who understands the world, who's going to call out the Jays, who knows what the tribe is doing. Putin knows all this. Putin is completely aware of his history, of the history of Russia and these people for the last 700 years. And it appears that even though you see every once in a while he takes a picture and does a press op with somebody wearing a tiny hat, he understands who has been the provocateurs in that country. He understands who the Bolsheviks were. You know, and he shits on, you know, on the Soviet past of the country. And I think that's one of the reasons.
Well, it's so, also too, people get it twisted and they act like there's still some kind of like 1920s America that like exists or something. And like, you know, Russia is like our geostrategic rival. It's like, there is no America, like in terms of the, in terms of officialdom, you know, there's people who want to live historically and live like as a discrete race of people. And then there's oblivion. And like, what, since 1933, America represents the oblivion option. You know, like you can't talk about the regime as if it like represents you or like your people or like some kind of like Western paradigm. Like, that's ridiculous. That doesn't exist. You know, so whatever. So long as Putin is resisting it, in an effective way, he's fulfilling his historical mission. You know, there's obviously grounds for criticism within those parameters. You know, and I think we deep dived into that, but that's, you know, if you're a white man and you are consider yourself historically situated, that's really the only metric. I gotta raise up again. I'm sorry to be abrupt. This was incredibly dope. Thanks for hosting me, man, and like tolerating my strange and cantankerous nature.
Thank you, Tom.
I am serious. Sorry, Tommy Simmons had to drop out. I'm serious that the guys you formulate part of my Mount Rushmore based. Everyone should. It's a very strange time that we all we're all here. Trust me, man. Like I said, me 5 years ago, it would be shaking his head at me right now. But me now is as I believe firmly that we are standing more closer to truth now than we ever have in any point.
Oh no, it's remarkable. Yeah. I didn't think, like I was telling a friend of mine the other day that I didn't think the things that have been emergent really in the last 4 years, especially, I didn't think this would emerge probably until after I was dead. So It's pretty extraordinary to be alive and to be blessed with the ability to participate in it, even if it's only in my own like small way. Should I plug my shit or is it going to be in the
comments? Yeah, please. Yep. No, it's in the comments, but plug away and Pete plug away and everyone and plug away.
I'm going to launch season 2 of the pod on Halloween. I know people have been asking about it. And when I do that, all season 1 content will be totally free. It'll come out from behind the paywall. And I'm going to try and start launching the Thomas TV streams right around then. But yeah, you can find me at, you can find the pod and all that at Substack. It's realthomas777.substack.com. You can always find my shit in kind of like a one-stop capacity at thomas777.com. It's number 7, HMAS777.com. For the time being, I'm on X, Twitter, whatever the fuck we're calling it these days. It's real, capital R-E-A-L underscore number 7, HMAS777. I got a pretty active Telegram channel. I try and keep it active because we never know like when we're going to get like freaking nuked off other platforms. But so seek, it's Thomas Graham on Telegram. Seek and you shall find. And the YouTube channel is Thomas TV, is number 7, HMAS space TV. And I'll plug that aggressively when I start populating it with like stream content and stuff. But that's where I can be found. So yeah, thank you, peoples. And I want to thank people for like dipping into the comments and chat and participating. That's great.
I'll talk to you tomorrow, Thomas.
Okay.
Yep. Peace. Later.
Jason.
Pete Quinones
show. Oh.
Hey.
Sorry.
The Pete Quinones show on PeteSubstack.com and Old Glory Club. Check out all of those. I appreciate you guys. Thank you.
Amazing. We appreciate you. Thank you, Pete.
Always, man.
And Jay, just thank you. Thank you for not asking me to follow Pete with my thoughts. No, I can't do it.
You have thoughts?
No man can be tasked with that.
Take care, man. Take care, guys. I got to go eat dinner.
That pizza off.
Later.
Ciao. It's so humbling. I'm going to give my thoughts after Thomas, Pete, and Tommy. Yeah, okay. Maybe Putin's a Russian. And I don't think he gives a fuck about us. And I don't think he should. But I wish we had a one of us that was one of him.
Russian. What are you going to do? Putin's Russian.
You know, there's going to be...
Russian problems require Russian solutions.
I know enough Russians to know
put a bit of borscht on there.
They look like us.
Have you rubbed a potato on the issue? Probably.
Yeah,
maybe.
Yeah, exactly.
A little bit mushrooms. Of radish. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much. This has been a dream of mine. Continuing dream of mine. Next month, we will be starting a conspiracy month, spooky thoughts month. We have a lineup that includes Adam Fitzgerald, possibly Mark Clare.
We have Mark Friesen.
Mark Friesen. And there might be, hopefully, we'll have some...
working on another two.
Some other
people. Maybe some team folks.
We won't spoil it. But that'll be part of our conspiracy month.
Sorry.
No, go ahead.
I'm not saying that. So far, it's Flat Earth.
You have
the
ideas.
The New World Order. I'm drunk and tired. It's those two, and then like Alex Jones and shit.
Yes,
it'll be rad.
Tune in next month. It'll be a month of conspiracies leading up to Alex Jones, Friend or Fed.
9/11. Sorry.
He's cute, folks. Thank you very much. Thanks everyone on Rumble. Thank you for chiming in. Thank you for everyone on YouTube for keeping the chat active. Thank you everyone for liking, subscribing. Get us up to 1,000 subscribers. Join our Patreon. Give us some money. Help pay some bills. We love you all, and we will see you again next week.